I'm Brian Roth, and you're listening to the Good Beer Hunting Podcast. This episode is part of a series of interviews recorded in December at Salute Sourfest, an annual beer festival hosted in Charlotte, North Carolina. The event attracts a curated selection of skilled sour-making breweries from around the country with a heavy presence from the Mid-Atlantic region. Sourfest represents a kind of festival that's rapidly growing in popularity, where attending breweries often run in the same circles or share a like-minded ethos, making for a special occasion for attendees instead of an event with any and every brewery that would care to send a keg. As drinkers sipped on a variety of wild and sour beers, I was able to pull a collection of brewers and business owners aside for brief conversations about their companies, specialties, and what's catching their eye in the industry. This episode and others run about 20-25 minutes, so we had time to dig in a little bit, but the interviews are a bit more focused than the free-ranging talks you hear most weeks here on the podcast. This episode features Scott Shore, owner of Charleston, South Carolina's Edmunds Oast. Listen in. I was at the restaurant before it was, there was a brewery involved too. And because I'd heard wonderful things about the food and especially the kind of array of beer selection too.
Cool.
And so I think in my mind, at least, your business has always been very closely associated beer and food together.
Yeah, definitely.
Why is that so important?
Well, I mean, obviously there's great synergy there. Edmunds Oast, the Edmunds Oast sort of entities, which there's now three different elements of Edmunds Oast, the Exchange, the original restaurant that you mentioned, and now Edmunds Oast Brewing Company, they're all about sort of delivering quality flavors more than anything. It's not just about food or beer or cocktails, wine, which we also do. It's about quality flavors that are well thought out, well presented, well paired, if we're pairing. So while our background sort of started in craft beer, I mean, my background started in craft beer arguably going back to like 2000, 2001 in Boston before I moved to Charleston. And then in 2008, when we opened the Charleston Beer Exchange, which was, you know, a big deal, little craft beer shop at the time, we always had a bigger picture in mind for just kind of being quality, flavor, and experience focused. So while people got to know us for craft beer, because that was where we felt comfortable making our mark in the early days, we never lost sight of a bigger picture. And I mean, we're really into food. My background was wine before it was beer, and spirits. Beer was my last blooming category, ironically, even though it's the only thing everybody knows me for now. But I was a wine and spirits professional before I ever even got into beer. So we never lost sight of all of those goals. And eventually, in 2014, when Edmunds Oast opened, the vision there was to create an emporium, if you will, that focused on a very high-quality selection of craft beers from our friends and heroes from all over the state, country, and world. Also to start brewing our own beers, which we have a small little 5-barrel brew house on site at that restaurant where we brew just for the restaurant and for our retail shop, and to brew some very interesting sort of non-competing but rather complementary style beers. Our most famous and infamous beer is a peanut butter and jelly beer, you know, which there's a few others in the market nowadays, but at the time, I think the only other people that were doing one were Funky Buddha, and ours is a totally different style. It's not a stout, you know, it's kind of like an amber ale with PB&J flavors. So we sought to make some beers like that instead of like competing with these incredible like IPAs and all that other stuff. And we make some IPA now, but I'm going back to 2014, 2015. And you know, have a really thoughtful, sort of carefully curated wine list that expressed our love for great wines from all over the world and unique flavors. We have a very progressive cocktail program. I say progressive, not really modernist per se, but progressive in that we're always sort of using new flavors, new ingredients. We have a very sharp head bartender who does not want to be called a mixologist named Jace McConnell, who's super talented and constantly, you know, searching for new inspirations, and we make great cocktails. And then, of course, food, which is, you know, a huge component, probably the biggest singular component, at least at the restaurant, which you mentioned. And with our food, we always wanted to, again, express the kinds of flavors at a quality level that we loved and searched for ourselves. So we were really into charcuterie. We wanted to make a, you know, whole animal butchery program where we're developing charcuterie in-house, and there's a lot of government regulations, even just on a small local scale, to jump through to be curing meats and all that kind of stuff. So we've always been the kind of organization that was willing to sort of put in the extra work to deliver a unique product. Against the odds, we do a lot of things that are passion-driven choices that we want to make to be who we want to be. So really, I guess what I'm saying is that restaurant was a labor of love, and that we wanted to create the place that we wanted to hang out at, that had great food, cocktails, wine, beer, and the kind of environment and service that we loved, all under one roof, because we were finding any of those elements at other places, but not all together. And it's very hard to be everything at once, and that's why most places don't do everything at once. And I'm not saying we nail it at 100%. We just try for that. And if we do it at 90%, I'll take that. I'm happy. There's always going to be someone else that's better at one thing. But trying to create a special place that encompasses everything that you love, and doing it pretty well and always striving to be better is definitely a goal. So that was where, like, that restaurant was born out of. And then over time, the brewing program in-house, you know, developed a lot. When we first opened, we always had the brewery there, but we weren't brewing yet when we first opened because we were still getting some kinks worked out. So launching our own beers was really fun. Ultimately, the success and love, fortunately, our guest appreciation for what we do led to both moving and rebuilding our original store. So the Charleston Beer Exchange sort of morphed into Edmunds Oast Exchange, which is a much bigger, beautiful two-story building next door to our restaurant now that is a beer and wine shop. It's got an incredible selection. And then about a two-minute drive up the road from the restaurant and the exchange is now Edmunds Oast Brewing Company, which is a much bigger brewery. It's a 30-barrel, five-vessel brew house. We've got over 20,000 square feet up there. We also have a taproom restaurant on a casual restaurant, but we're doing lunch and dinner and sort of just continuing to follow our passion for all the things that we love and hoping that people want to come along for the ride.
There's been, at least from my perspective, a very big change in the discussion around beer and food in just the handful of years that you have had your businesses open. Whether it's what you see widely in the industry or even just in South Carolina, how has that conversation and experience changed in talking about and presenting this idea of food and beer together over the course of the last few years?
Sure. Well, you can always look to wine as the example, because as much as a lot of us beer nerds don't like to give wine too much credit, you know, wine has blazed the trail for sort of connoisseurship, collection, you know, acceptability of higher price points, and dedication to pairing beverage and food together for quite a while. So beer is certainly not wine, and beer can be, you know, the best beer in the world can be made anywhere, whereas the best wine in the world is very terroir driven and close to its source and a lot more limited. And I think that's why you can express a greater array of creativity in beer. And I give beer a ton of credit, and I'm not trying to sort of equivocate either, you know, those two things together. But looking at that sort of element of pairings and sort of appreciation and togetherness and sort of wholesomeness, and like that you can't have a great meal with just great food without a great drink, or that you can't fully appreciate what a great drink can be without pairing it with great food that works synergistically together, a sort of a mindset that I think needed to be adapted across all beverages. And it doesn't have to be about just beer and obviously wine, but I mean, this applies to spirits and cocktails. This applies to coffee and tea. Craft soda is sort of blowing up now. There's new types of beverage combinations emerging. So I don't want to get sort of tangential, but I mean, we're really about embracing all forms of beverage culture. It's easy to see the sort of craft beer explosion that's happened in recent years and assume that everyone's savvy and everyone's thinking logically about pairings, but that's not true. That's not true at all. Just because people are really into beer or even really into food doesn't mean that they're really thinking about them together. So in Edmunds Oast, for example, or in our retail store when we're helping people pick out things to take home, you know, we're constantly having that conversation. We're continuously educating our own staff, broadening our own horizons, tasting, training, so that we can educate our guests as to what might enhance their experience, whether it's dining in our restaurant or taking something home. We want to help them put something together that's going to make them say, wow. They don't always come in, you know, thinking about it like that. And we're also not the type of organization that sort of like forces textbook pairings. So you're not going to come in and see, you know, beef stroganoff on the menu with the, you know, required pairing, you know, like quack Belgian double or something like that. Like, we don't believe in that at all. Like, we actually don't promote pre-planned pairings at all.
Why is that important?
Because we like to leave things open. I mean, there's no right or wrong answer, first of all. You know, you...
Like, So I would imagine there are BJCP people who would say that's not the right way to look at it, though.
I'm sure there are.
So why is it that you feel, not to say there's a right or wrong in this instance, because it's all subjective, it's taste.
Sure.
So why is it that your perspective and the way you do things is the best way for you?
Sure. So in our experience, and we have and this isn't just me, that we have an incredible team of wine, beer, spirits professionals, as well as an extraordinary culinary team. And in our collective experience, our collective hundreds of years of experience together, we see limitless possibilities. No disrespect to the BJCP, but I mean, we're looking at things not from just a textbook beer style pairing presentation, but we're looking at a big picture presentation. We're looking at, okay, this guest in front of me typically drinks, let's say, French Sauvignon Blanc and loves seafood, but they're here at Edmunds Oast tonight and they want to try something different. And we're going to, they're ordering, I don't know, to say any, it's a charcuterie platter and some cheese. They were going to get a glass of Sancerre, but they're willing to step outside the box and drink a beer. Now, am I going to like fall back on just a BJCP style textbook, you know, whatever, Pilsner, and say, oh, well, you like light white wine, I'm going to give you a light, clear beer? It's, you know, of course not. I mean, if someone loves sharp Sauvignon Blanc, I'm running straight for like a Tilkin Goose or something like that. And I'm not afraid to put it down in front of them. I'm not afraid to say like, oh, you wouldn't like a sour beer, your palate's not advanced enough. Quite to the contrary, you know, people that are used to drinking beverages in other categories, wine, spirits, they're pretty accustomed to bold flavors and are often less shocked than a novice drinker at all. Like if you take a, obviously many people might accidentally start drinking before they're 21. So let's say an 18-year-old kid right. That's only ever had a Coors Light or Rolling Rock and hand them like a Goose Lambic or something like that, they're going to spit it out and say it's disgusting. But if you give someone that's used to drinking like mineral, tangy, high acid driven, you know, white wines and give them a Goose Lambic, they're going to sip it and say, oh, this kind of reminds me of champagne or, you know, something like that. So you actually find a lot more open-mindedness once you get the beverage on the palate and you take it past the just talking about it and into the actually tasting it zone. So yeah, I think you find a lot more open-mindedness there. So to get back to your original question, we don't ever want to limit ourselves or box ourselves in. You know, all those old school textbook pairings of spicy food with IPA and this and that, I mean, they just don't always apply. And you don't have to like that. Like you can like, you know, whatever, Imperial Porter with your spicy food, and that's right too. It's not wrong. So we're able to deliver a much more comprehensive and thoughtfully curated experience by not limiting ourselves to sort of anything textbook, so to speak. I think the textbook on how you pair a certain type of beverage to a certain type of food is probably an outdated concept. And, you know, for BJCP folks, which are critically important to furthering quality within select styles in our industry, and I give them full credit, but I don't know how many of them have the culinary palate to match their beer palate either. So you have to take in someone's like full experience to really make a judgment on whether or not you're doing something right or wrong. And I would argue that there's almost no wrong in food and beer as long as you're quality driven and enjoying your experience.
Mm-hmm. So thematically, there was not to do directly with food or beer. There was something that I was really interested to talk to you about. As I was trying to kind of expand my knowledge of you and Edmund Zost, I came across there was a piece in Charleston City Paper that had been written about. There was a write-up about you where there was some kind of negative online feedback about a picture that was featured of you. This was from a few years ago.
That was from that was a city paper wrote a follow-up article to my Pecha Kucha presentation, which if Pecha Kucha is a weird thing that happens all over the world where different people give very short presentations with slideshows behind them and talk about whatever they want.
It's like, I interpret it as kind of like a TEDx kind of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe not that glamorous or flashy, but you gave yours about the theme of, online bullying, for lack of a better term?
Yeah. I mean, and not in the class, not like in a sense of, you know, a poor kid in high school.
Right.
This was about like sort of unwarranted, like, slamming of restaurateurs, breweries, whatever, like in an F&B sense, and like the people that sort of go online and just like trash talk. And I welcome critical feedback based on actual product, service, experience, anything we've done wrong. I mean, go for it. But this was more about like people go, like there, in the example you mentioned, there was a picture of me like in a sport jacket holding a glass of beer, and the comment section loaded up with, you know, me look, forgive the language, but the comment section loaded up with comments about how I look like a pretentious douche and I was probably an asshole. This is all based just like on a photo, you know? So I had a fun presentation giving everyone a laugh, essentially just reading back those comments and providing my own comments on those comments.
I think thinking about the kind of online interaction, whether it's ratings or message boards or things like that, at least in the experiences and interactions that I've had with brewers and brewery owners, this is something they're very conscious of. And I don't know if this is still something, again, this is a couple of years old at this point, but at least from reading it, at least in that moment in time, it was something I recognized that something you were very much thinking about. And so part of what I was curious is, you know, from your perspective as someone who's thought about this critically and with empathy and thought for others, what your impression is of how that might have changed, or how your own viewpoint on that has changed since that time.
Since that time, I mean, you certainly, like from on a personal perspective, you certainly get a thicker skin. I mean, at this point, it's like comic fodder for me to like read those things and get a laugh and share them with my peers. So sort of being in a world where those things constantly get lobbed out there, you have to sort of desensitize and see the humor in it. And it's sick to say embrace it, but sort of what it is. I mean, like, I mean, at this point, it's fun. I probably shouldn't be, but it's really just like, I guess it's just a coping mechanism. But I mean, people are just so silly with those kind of things and having those kind of attitudes, and, you know, not saying, oh, I tried this beer that they made and I really thought it was lacking because of this and this, but rather just saying, oh yeah, no, those guys must be an asshole because this picture looks like that guy's an asshole. Therefore, who would drink that crap? Is you have to take it with a grain of salt and have a little fun with it too.
How did you learn to best do that?
Lack of choice. It was, So we've seen a little bit of media attention, a little bit of spotlight, you know, ever since we opened, even before opening the Charleston Beer Exchange. So, I mean, it's been a long while now, but really when you open a high profile restaurant, as we did with Edmund Zost in 2014, like the last 4 years, you know, you're just buried underneath that stuff all the time. Some people just avoid reading. It's you know, it's really online. It's really like comment sections of online articles or social media posts. Some people just avoid reading it to try to not even think about it or know about it. There's, you know, people like me that read all of it and have as much fun with it as they possibly can. I think you have to develop your own coping mechanisms just to like get around that. But you also, I do want to tease out the pieces of actual, even negative, I'm talking about, but constructive critical feedback. So, you know, I want to see if a person doesn't like something that we make or something that we do, and they are actually spelling out the reasons why. That's incredibly helpful. And you can't be defensive about that kind of thing. You have to be, if you want to be successful and have longevity, you have to be willing to receive, you know, negative feedback that does, you know, define itself with constructive points. So, I mean, I'm grateful to someone that's willing to take the time to actually tell me something we're not doing right and back it up with some points about that and give us the opportunity to improve it. So some of that gets mixed in. So if you want to catch all that stuff, you got to read the good and the bad and laugh at the silly stuff, use the important stuff. And of course, you get lots of kind praise too, and that makes you feel better. So it's all about just like keeping a level head and balance in how you look at, I guess, the world and accepting how the world looks at you.
Well, here's hoping for lots of 5 bottle caps and Untapped today.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks very much for joining.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, folks. If you'd like to hear more from this series, we've got 5 interviews in total, all available on the Good Beer Hunting website. If you'd like to support GBH, join our Fervent Few community. You can learn more at patreon.com/goodbeerhunting. That's patreon.com/goodbeerhunting. As part of the community, you get access to a host of perks, in addition to sharing your voice with those of us on the GBH editorial team. We're so thankful for the support, encouragement, and inspiration of the Fervent Few and what they offer beer lovers too. That's going to be it for this week. Our music is produced by Andrew Thibodeau, and our sound engineer is Jordan Stalling of Particle Audio. Aim true, poor liberal folks. Have a great week.